Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, where we share spiritual and practical ideas for how to live family life with a beautiful, self-sacrificing love.
Today, we are joined by behavioral health therapist Lewis Jones. Lewis has worked in several community engagement organizations, as well as consulting in social ministry with institutions, including the USCCB. Lewis shares profound insights into Catholic social doctrine and the call for us to participate in our civic duties. Okay, Lewis, thank you so much for being on our show today.
I'm honored and blessed. I'm so thankful to be here with you.
So we'd love to just start with kind of just telling us a little bit about yourself and why you're going to come on this show and talk to us about, you know, Catholic social teaching and our civic duty to vote and all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm honored to be asked. This topic is dear to me. So my dad has been an activist my whole life. And so even before I was really practicing my faith, I was kind of shaped in that world. Then I had an encounter with Catholic social doctrine when I did have my reversion into the church. And I just recognized we have so many riches that inform how we're called to engage in social and civic life that we just so infrequently mine. And so I've just been so passionate about it. It's like such a rich tradition and heritage that really is like, I mean, people call it, the best kept secret in the Catholic Church. I mean, it's something that no other tradition has the wealth of just insight and information that can enrich our social lives. But I've also done stuff in this world kind of professionally. Worked at a place called the Gephardt Institute for Civic and Community Engagement, very relevant to this. Worked in the world of voting engagement, getting people out for civic engagement in election season. Did a podcast on this topic called The Civic Moment, where we talked about we interviewed civic and community leaders from across the political spectrum just to figure out what called you into civic participation and leadership. So we had elected officials from various parties and with different positions on things and just talked to them, like, what got you into this? Why did you want to become a civic leader? And just mine those rich insights. So I'm passionate about this. Currently, though, I work as a behavioral health therapist, both at St. Louis University Hospital and also outside seeing clients, and then have done consulting with social ministry agencies and organizations and institutions, even the USCCB for their kind of civic engagement stuff that they do as well. So just very passionate about this and kind of have a lot of tentacles in this.
Yes. So let's kind of just dive in a little bit on this. So we talk about Catholic social doctrine and just the idea that we have all these riches in our own faith. Can you please explain to us kind of what, if someone were to say, okay, what is Catholic social doctrine? And also, like, what are the key principles of it?
Yeah. So, sometimes when you hear Catholic social doctrine, it may be called Catholic social teaching. Mm-hmm. There is, like, in some academics, they actually distinguish this. But in reality, I mean, you can just think of it as the same tradition. Many people date it back to Rerum Novarum, which was a document that came out in the late 1800s. And really, that was looking at this. It was kind of examining the new things of our social order, right? You had industrialization. You had a lot of debates about work and the nature of work and kind of an evolving industrialized society and all the complexities around that. And so the church was like, we need to reflect on this. There's moral implications to what's happening in our social and economic life. And we need to inform the bishops, inform the faithful about how they're called to respond and engage with all these new things happening. And so since then, the tradition has continued to expand and develop to the point where it has become its own kind of area of moral theology. So very important. Catholic social doctrine is moral theology. It is not philosophy, and it is not political ideology, which is very important. St. John Paul II talks about this in his document, I think, Sanctissimus Honoris. He talks about how we have to make sure we don't think of this as an ideology. This is not like a political idea. This is actually moral teaching that we use to evaluate every other political idea, every philosophy. All that is evaluated through the lens of Catholic social doctrine as a Catholic. So these principles are keys that we should use in all areas of our social life, regardless of our political perspective, or regardless of our nationality or ethnicity. These are universal principles based in the gospel and the natural law. And so what are some of these principles? Well, you'll see them delineated differently by different people. Again, this is like a diverse field. It's very broad. Mm-hmm. I like the Vatican's very simple approach. USCCB has 7 different principles, but the Vatican has 4. And I think through those 4 principles, you can find all the rest of the principles. So the 4 principles kind of play off each other in kind of this dyad almost, if you will. So there's human dignity, the life and the dignity of the human person. That's actually the key criterion by which you evaluate every social institution. Mm-hmm. Is what does it do for the dignity of the human person, right? So from economics, this economic system, to a political system, to any institution, to the family, right? All that, the core of that all is the dignity of the human person. And that is also, you know, counterbalanced with the need to always have respect to the common good. So that's the second principle, is the common good. Now these things, although there's a tension, they should never be in conflict, right? We would say like the common good is really the sum total of all goods that lead to people's individual and collective perfection, right? Well, that's actually like more of a technical definition. But in reality, if you're doing something for the common good of human people, it should be good for every single individual human person, right? We can get into the details of how that plays out. And then the other two principles are solidarity, which is, I mean, it's a deep thing to define, but essentially it's like almost like social love, social charity, social friendship. It's this idea that we're kind of called to be present to go out towards and serve our fellow humans, you know, just as Christ did. Christ, you know, laid down his life and called us friends, and we should call, you know, everybody friends. Even going back to Aristotle, he talks about this need for civic friendship, which in our tradition, now we look at it, social friendship. Pope Francis just wrote a document on solidarity called Fratelli Tutti, brothers and sisters all. He goes deep on solidarity, highly recommend. And that is always juxtaposed and kind of balanced with subsidiarity, which is a key Catholic principle. And actually, some people look at it as almost like this very unique thing in Catholicism. Is like almost like it's, I don't want to say it's like most defining principle, but in Catholic tradition, subsidiarity is like more richly defined than almost anywhere else, right? And subsidiarity is the sense that these various levels of authority in every social system, and that the higher levels of authority are not called to dominate and intervene in the lower levels of authority. They're called to help and support those lower levels of authority to flourish and to thrive. And so often, right, with subsidiarity and solidarity, it's often a tension, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there may be an issue that's, you know, all the way over there, and we're like, I want to be in solidarity with those people suffering over there, which you can always do, prayer, other forms of support. But we would say that the best way to typically solve issues is to empower those closest to the issue, right? Through mm-hmm. subsidiarity, because they have the best knowledge and the best capacity to address a concern. So solidarity and subsidiarity often intersect in individual human dignity and collective common good also mm-hmm. always are kind of together. And these four principles form a cohesive vision of our Catholic social doctrine. Through those four principles, we can evaluate every social system, every policy, like all things, right? And even really in our social and family lives, like through our friendships, we can evaluate those even through the lens of those four principles.
Wow. And I guess it's funny to sit and just think about those four things, because, you know, I think in today's day and age, there's so much going on that people, it's so confusing and how to evaluate certain things. So if you just stick with those four, so let's go into, let's say common good. I think that was the first one that made me like think a little bit deeper, because obviously human dignity, you know, we want to respect the human life, but common mm-hmm. good, you know, people could have different opinions of what they think the common good is. So in regards to the church, how would we evaluate whether this is something that is, you know, supporting the common good of everyone or not?
Yeah, well, that's a huge question, and it's rightly a huge question. I would say this: that, you know, the church has principles that, you know, are definitive and that don't change regardless of culture, regardless of time, whatever. You know, these principles are, you know, you could say they're built into human nature. They're part of the natural law. They're part of what makes us human beings. Mm-hmm. They're part of what makes us a human family. And so we can use some of those core principles to evaluate different things that may affect the common good, policies, events, you know, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. It's important though to say that people can have different visions of what the common good, like what policy may or may not best move for the common good, mm-hmm. right? And we're kind of getting now into the place where we talk about the, like, where the church's role in facilitating the common good, and where, like, and by the church I mean the hierarchical authority of the church and the teaching authority, how that shapes our understanding of the common good, and then the responsibility of individual, especially lay Catholics, in moving forward the common good, right? Mm-hmm. So the church, they have this role of formation, right? The clergy, they should hopefully go very deep on these principles, and they should work to transmit them to the lay faithful. Mm-hmm. Because the lay faithful they're a part of the temporal order, right? They are a part of like this secular order, and by secular, I don't mean secularist order, like not antagonistic towards faith. I just mean secular in the sense of kind of dealing with the things of the world, right? We're built into that, right, as lay people. And so we'll be called to discern at any given moment what is for the common good in this situation, based on what I know about the gospel, based on what I know about our tradition. How in this individual circumstance am I going to discern, using the virtue of prudence, how am I going to discern what actually is for the common good? So, for example, to use a practical example, for our families, right? There are certain principles in our families, and our families actually are a social order, right? Mm-hmm. This is really important. The family is the building block of society. It actually is a society, mm-hmm. right? All the principles of Catholic social doctrine apply to the family, right? This is a whole other topic where we can go on. But we can look in the family to understand how this applies in broader ways. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, tell you obviously as a family, you know, okay, the common good is going to entail, I make sure my kids get food. I make sure they get education. I make sure that they get a roof over their head. I make sure that they're safe. I make sure that, you know, that we have a family life that has order, joy, happiness. All of these principles, the church teaches us this. We know this, and also through reason, we can know this. But how we go about building that is actually up to our prudence, right? We have to kind of prudentially make these decisions, okay? Like, what school do I want to send my kid to? I know that education is critical, is important. Or how do I want to educate them? Maybe I educate them at home because that's best. Maybe we do a kind of a mixed hybrid thing. You know, maybe we do, you know, whatever, boarding school. I don't know. It could be anything where you have to discern what's for the common good of your social order. And that's the role of the authorities ahead of that common good, which are the parents, mm-hmm. right? And again, that's where subsidiary comes in. Because if the federal government came into your home and said, this is how you need to educate your children, that would be a violation of your rights, right? Because that's not respecting subsidiary, right? Even if they're saying, hey, we're trying to help. Well, okay, I don't need that help. I just, I really need to maybe be empowered to make that decision. But at the end of the day, it's my responsibility to do that. And so again, with the common good, we always have, it's a discernment process. We use the principles the church gives us. We use, you know, those four principles I gave you. Mm-hmm. We also use four other principles called social values. And the social values of the Catholic Church, very under discussed. You often won't hear them talked about. You can find them in the compendium of the social doctrine of the church. Truth, freedom, justice, and love, right? Every social relationship we have should be also defined by those four. I almost think of them as like cardinal virtues of social relationships. That's my own personal. But so you also should say, like, is what I'm doing in the truth, is it facilitating authentic justice? Is it loving? And is it respecting human freedom? And those things also can help our discernment for the common good. And so, yeah, that's really important. The common good, so just to put a cap on it, basically it has to be discerned by every individual in any given circumstance. The church can give you principles about what a just economic system is, but it's really that person who's that elected official who's writing that policy and like making those decisions. Okay, this is like the trade-off here. This is the trade-off here. Like tax policy, right? This is the trade-off here. Is this for the common good here? And so we use these broad principles that can kind of guide us in these very minute, very specific, tangible ways. There's a couple of different ways that we could do, reach a good end, you could say. And the church kind of just guides us there.
Yeah, that's excellent actually to point out that there might be multiple ways of doing something depending upon the values and the doctrine and those principles of the church. So kind of taking all of these ideas, these principles and these values, mm-hmm. how does it, as a individual, a lay person, how does it impact our kind of, or encourage our civic participation in, especially today as we're approaching, you know, this election?
I think one thing that we have to all as Catholics, regardless of, you know, how stressed out we are about the season, we all have a responsibility to participate. Mm-hmm. We all have a responsibility to participate. In the USCCB's seven, you know, breakdowns of Catholic social doctrine, they actually use this as one of their like kind of delineations of it, the call to participation. Mm-hmm. And you can find that in the Vatican view of solidarity, right? We're called to act out of love. Pope Francis says that politics is the highest form of charity. And when we're thinking about this political season, we often don't think of it as loving or as a loving space of love. No, but it actually is supposed to be, right? The whole world is supposed to be infused with the love of Jesus Christ. And that's what we as Catholics are called to go out and do. We're called to bring that to that sphere. So if we recede from political life, we are removing the presence of Christ, because we're called to be Christ. We're removing the presence of Christ from that. We're like, oh man, this is so stressful. Like I don't see the gospel anywhere in these, what these people are saying, or what the policies are people are talking about, or in the arguments back and forth. Well, guess what? Maybe that's where we're called to be, that kind of presence of Christ there. And we're called to like salt, be salt and light in these spaces. Mm-hmm. So we absolutely have to take these principles and we have to bring them to bear in kind of our civic life. Mm-hmm. So obviously everyone's thinking right now about the election and voting. And so we should use these principles to evaluate and say, hey, look, this may be stressful for me. This may be a stressful season, but I have to figure out some way I can be a part of it. I can make an impact in this. And that for most people is through voting, right? Voting is encouraged by the church, very much so encouraged. In the faithful citizenship documents from the bishops, they do say that under extreme circumstances, one can choose not to vote if you live in a country that has voting. But that's very limited. Like I almost cannot think of a situation in which like recent time when there's been a reason, and that's everybody has to discern that, but it's supposed to be very serious that you don't, which is why Pope Francis, even in recent comments he made off the cuff, was like, you have to vote. He literally said, you have to vote. Now, obviously, Pope Francis said a lot of things like kind of extemporaneously, but we can discern not to vote, right, in extreme circumstances. And I think for most of us, though, we're called to figure out, who is really valuing these principles, the life and dignity of the human person, the common good, respecting subsidiarity, who is really putting these principles forth. And of course, the Catholic Church goes even deeper on things like economic structure, and all these other things. So there's that. We're called to do things, participate through things like voting, and we need to use our principles as a church to discern, okay, what does the church teach and who best advances this? Not doesn't need to be perfect, but who advances this the best? Mm-hmm. But also we're called to participate in our local communities in other ways, right? I think often, especially in political season, we think about voting and like the president and, even the senators or, whatever. But Catholic social doctrine actually calls us to participate in a even more dynamic fashion, right? The political dimension is a key dimension, but think about how you involved in your neighborhood, right? Through things like neighborhood associations, that builds up the civic common good actually, right? And push forward in local issues that you're dealing with as a community, how you're involved in other groups that are helping to alleviate issues in your local community, school boards, library boards. I mean, there's so many different ways you can get involved that even if you're like, man, the presidential situation is so stressful, the senatorial situation is so stressful, guess what? There's a ton of other places where civic engagement is happening. And as Catholics, we should probably be some of the most knowledgeable people about our civic community life, what's happening in elections, who our elected officials are, because this is, again, the highest form of charity and we're called to bring love into our society. So we should know these things so that we can make the biggest difference for the gospel. So there's just some consideration, but in reality, there's so many ways to get involved. And again, based on your local community, you have to discern, I have to get involved somehow. Which way is going to be best for my family in this season?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think you just said it. Just thinking about it's called to charity, to be able to participate in these things. And even just focusing on the community aspect, like your local community. What would you say to someone who just has like the fears of feeling like they're going to be judged or not listened to or heard because of their faith or because of their current situation? What would you say to those people who feel less inclined to participate?
It's very difficult. I respect that deeply. It can be hard. And so to pretend it's not is not helpful. But I think what does help is remembering the virtue of courage. We need to have the virtue of courage. That's an important part of our faith. And remembering these principles that are at stake, I think that helps. I also reflect on people like the martyrs, right? Mm-hmm. Who through horrible circumstances, people were jailed for decades. I mean, people are going through such difficult things. And so when we think about, wow, it's so hard for me to talk about this one issue because of the stress. Yeah, it might be hard, but think about how hard it is for other people who are jailed for 10 years for this, and just kind of, you put it in perspective and you realize, look, like if this is a small way that I can maybe serve Christ, like I can serve the world, I can serve love through having this difficult conversation. That's like evangelization, right? St. John Paul II says that our Catholic social doctrine is actually an integral aspect of the new evangelization. Helping people understand our Catholic social doctrine and the teachings of our church on these issues of life, economics, and things like that, that is evangelization. So we should also think of it as evangelization. Like people may judge us, they may look, askance on our opinions, but they're sharing their opinions. Like, so why not share your opinion? right? And also, again, I think it's how we do it, right? And I think this is where prudence comes in, like, because our inclination should not be to get vengeance on people, to own people, and not mean own like physically, but like own them, like, you know, in an argument. Like the whole idea should be, I'm loving this person, like I'm doing this out of love. Similar to when we share, you know, the gospel and other topics. You know, of course, it can be hard, you know, if you have friends of different faiths, you know, just to share, like, hey, this is why we, you know, we ask for Mary's intercession. They're like, oh, that's blasphemous. Or all, you know, of course, people in all these things, when they disagree, will have different opinions. But if you do it in a loving way and you talk to them about it, then they're like, oh, let's, you know, let's talk about it, like whatever. And it can be a place of actually, you know, you can have conversations you wouldn't expect through having the courage to enter into those conversations, even when they're difficult.
And going off of those conversations too, the difficult conversations, how would you kind of address issues amongst community members, amongst friends, amongst people that you don't know, of like poverty, of race, of, I mean, there's a lot of things that those are very big topics, and inequalities,
yeah, right.
and things like that. So if you want to just choose one of those, but to not have the fear, to have the courage to discuss those topics, because I think, you know, some people might feel less qualified to discuss certain issues, but it's still a response, you know, it's still that responsibility of knowing our foundations of our faith, and you know, if you know that, then just how would you address those issues?
Yeah, those are good questions.
The hot button issues.
I would say this, you know, like I said before, Catholic social doctrine provides a theological foundation to understand and evaluate different questions. So there can be legitimate diversity of political opinions and philosophical opinions even about a lot of topics amongst Catholics in good standing, right? I think that's really important to understand. As Catholics, we should foster this sense of freedom. Like, we have a church that spans the globe and spans time and space. So people have had different political opinions, right? Saints have had different political opinions. Like, so, you know, we have to have that kind of respect for that, like, dialogue there. So I think that's really important. But how do we, I guess, address these issues? Again, I would go back to one of the things that I think about very importantly are the social values. How am I evaluating these questions through the lens of truth, freedom, justice, and love? Whatever that may be. So for truth, you know, on a hot button issue, let's just say, like, on a discernment, like, how am I going to discern how to engage on this XYZ hot button issue? I have to have respect for the truth. Pope Francis has talked so deeply about the dangers of ideology, the dangers of ideology. Ideology to me is, I mean, it's hard to put a definition on it, but it's basically like when ideas are crowding out reality, right? He talks about this in Evangelii Gaudium, where he says, like, reality is more important than ideas. So we have to make sure that ideology is not shaping how we're viewing a particular social reality, right? Because that would be a violation of the principle of truth. So we got to get to the truth. That can be through empirical analysis. We can look at articles. We can read, you know, get firsthand accounts, things like that. And we should keep always digging for the truth of things and always be willing to change our opinions about a hot button issue. So we have to be able to hear different opinions, but also be able to say, evaluate this in the light of truth, not just necessarily what, like, scintillates my ear at any given moment, right? What actually is true here? Then, you know, justice, right? Justice is giving a person what they're due. The church actually has this beautiful, I think it's in Mater et Magistra, which is a document of St. John the 23rd. He lays out human rights and human responsibilities. And he goes through this very powerful section. He just had his feast day recently. And so I went through back through that document in celebration of that. But you go back through those and you can see, okay, these are the human rights that the church kind of views as important. These are the human responsibilities that the church views as important. I can use that as a lens to understand particular hot button issues, whether it be inequalities of different kinds, because there's a difference between sinful inequalities from the eyes of the church and natural inequalities, which exist also, right? That's also in the church's tradition. And so kind of evaluating, like, okay, what's kind of at play here in these particular circumstances of whatever, poverty, maybe be like inequality between nations, like, what are the particular concerns here from that standpoint? Okay. And that's the justice place of it. Freedom, human freedom, maybe particular policies we can evaluate, like, is this, like, where is human freedom at play here, right? We always want to have such a deep respect for human freedom that comes in the place of religion, philosophical and political opinions, right to choose work, right to choose, you know, relationships, you know, as long as they're within, like, the teachings of the church in terms of what that means. But obviously, like, you know, for example, you can't say you have to marry this person, like, you know, that's violating somebody's freedom as a human person. So, like, all those different things, we have to use those tools also to evaluate particular policies, hot button issues. Where is human freedom here? And that also goes to right and responsibilities. Where is one person's responsibility here versus a right that they have here? And where is the kind of proper level of engagement with this particular issue, right? That can be something that we use. And then love, is this a loving approach to this issue? Or is this, where is love at in this particular concern? Which can be deep, but I think also is really important. Where is compassion? Where is understanding of the person? Where is like sacrifice? All those different things. Obviously, what would Jesus do, right? That's how, I think that helps us to see where love is at in a particular place. But we have to use those principles, I think, to bring those to particular issues, whether it be poverty, race, whatever the situation may be. Again, poverty, the church has a rich teaching on poverty, obviously on charity as well as the justice. You go all the way back to the early church fathers and they say, you know, if you have two pairs of shoes and somebody doesn't have one, that's basically injustice. I mean, they go that far. St. John Chrysostom goes that far. Basil also talks about this in his, there's a series of homilies he does on social justice, very powerful stuff.
Yeah.
And this goes back from the fourth century, right? Mm-hmm. But how does that apply in our particular context now, right? And so that's where you kind of bring that reflection to bear and again, look for the truth in certain things, whether it be like, what is my engagement from a charitable standpoint or what does a good policy look like here? Mm-hmm. And so I want to give a prescription, but I just want to say like, use these sources we have to evaluate. And the church has principles, deep principles on all of these things, particularly the charity and justice. So we just recommend looking at that. And also a plug for this document, Deus Caritas Est by Pope Benedict XVI, mm-hmm. where he talks about, you know, the role of the church in providing charitable works. And also like the church's role in helping to form people to discern where justice is in a particular society to address these socio-political questions. So I highly recommend reviewing that too.
Mm. That actually goes into my next question of the role of the church in helping people discern, you know, because they can't tell you exactly who to vote for, but
you're right.
Kind of what is the role of, you touched on it earlier, but I just want to kind of rediscuss or talk about it again, but just the idea of like lay Catholics versus the clergy versus, you know, religious, and how do those groups, you know, the clergy and religious groups affect the lay people? And then how, you know, what's their response? Is their responsibility the same? Is it all, you know, all that, is it different? Yeah. I don't know. Just curious what your thoughts would be on that.
Yeah, that's a beautiful question because I think it's really important. We take it for granted that we feel like it would be weird if we saw like a priest running for president of the United States, but like, that's kind of different. But actually that in the past, there have been priests that have been in elected office. There's been priests that I think were senators in the United States. I think it was like a state Senate, but I know there's been elected priests. There was actually a big movement in South America where many priests joined a revolution against the government and became ministers and stuff like that. It's a lot. And so Pope St. John Paul II cracked down on that. He was like, look, you cannot run for office. Like you cannot be like, and he really tried to help to bring, I mean, obviously the tradition has spoken about this historically, but you know, he really was trying to help people to understand the priest's role. They are called out of society to be ministers of the sacraments, of the word, of charity. But really there, in terms of the structuring of the social order, that's the lay faithful's role. The priest should not do that. Religious should not do that. They should help to form lay Catholics with an understanding of the doctrine, so that they're able to effectively go out and make these prudential judgments in light of the gospel, and to have the firm foundation of natural law, of our social tradition in doing so, right? In all the diverse realities that we have just in different countries and different political situations, but we have to form these lay people to go out and really transform that. In the second to last chapter of the Compendium of the Social Doctrine, it talks about the lay faithful's role, this is the heart of what we're called to do as laity. We're called to build up the temporal order. There's been a rediscovery of the role of the laity, you know, over the past 150 plus years or so. And a big part of this rediscovery is like the lay people are not like these inert people that just show up on Sunday. No, they're called to bring the gospel to every aspect of their social life. Mm-hmm. And that especially means like going out and running for office. The church actually recommends people are formed and prepared to go run for office in political offices. You know, obviously they're going to be in roles like in, you know, in banks, roles as farmers, right? All these different places in society, even as mothers in the home, fathers in the home, like that's also a role that has a civic dimension. And so they're formed in Catholic social doctrine, and they're able to like bring to these different realities the doctrine. They're really able to bring the gospel there. I highly recommend people just, and this has been something that's been like discerned over time, right? Different times, because back early, also in the early 20th century, the Catholic Action Movement was like kind of this synthesis of like, I'm not critiquing Catholic Action totally, but it was a motto that almost believed that the laity had to be kind of like sent out by the like hierarchy to do things like that. Many saints and other people have reflected that that's not a proper understanding. Lay people have a call through baptism to go out and really bring the gospel to the social order, right? And really evangelize our world while not believing that that work will make the kingdom of God like that's not that who brings about the kingdom of God is Jesus Christ, not our own actions. And so we try to bring everything to Christ in the world, right? Especially these social and economic realities. But we also don't have a vision of utopian societies, right? As if we're going to create a utopian society on earth, knowing, because we know, and we bring this is also in the Compendium of Social Doctrine. One of the special things that lay faithful bring to these discussions is a sense that these things are not the end all be all, right? Which is why we should never, get into these debates where even we're talking about very important things, life and death situations. We still have to remember love, and we have to remember that everybody's going to be judged by God at the end of the day, and we have an eternal destiny. Every person, the person we talk to, has infinite dignity, worth, and value, and they're all destined for God, overall. And so, even in these discussions we have, like, we cannot make politics our God. We cannot make politics, the end all be all, right? And so, the doctrine also helps us to do that, to have a formation that orients us towards heaven, even in the temporal realities that we're sent out to transform. So, I think that's what the church is supposed to do: form us, guide us, and provide the principles and the values that really help us to make those prudential decisions.
Perfect. That's great. Love that answer. I think that's such a solid thing to think about, even as, as we're there are some things on in certain states that are up in amendments that are being done, or
Yes.
and the church, well, some bishops are speaking to those amendments, to those bills
Yes.
that are trying, because they are based on human dignity. They're based on solidarity. Those things,
Yes.
that's where it's important and powerful for to hear your priest or your pastor speak about those things. What would you say about someone who, because you have the extreme of like someone who makes it their religion that, politics is everything, and if this doesn't go the way that it needs to go, then the world's going to end, versus the people who are not inclined to participate at all.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking more so even just young people. I think maybe I'm seeing a lot more like invigoration to participate civically, but there's kids that might just turn 18 and don't really care, or what
Yeah,
would
yeah.
you how would you encourage them to realize this is actually, a gift, I guess, to be able to participate?
Yeah, I mean, I would help them to see just how our political life, how policy really impacts every aspect of our life. And look, I always try to be careful with this because there can be two extremes, right? Like there can be people who, like you were saying, like I was saying, make politics their life, the end all be all, kind of like, again, it's this activist spirit. And I've been involved in activism, but you want to be, you don't want that. You don't want your heart to be set on the things of this world, right? As Christians, we want to have a Christian detachment, even from things that are of vast significance and importance. So, you want to have that Christian detachment, right? But yes, you also want to be able to know, okay, these policies really make a difference, right? They impact everything. And especially when you help people to understand the different layers of authority. When I talk to people and like, I tell them like that there's a library board, there's a school board. I mean, now people know more about school board, but for a long time, people didn't, they would look at their ballot and they'd be like, who are these people? I don't even know what this is that they're running for. Like they're literally like, what is a circuit clerk? Like, what is this? Like, they don't know what these things are. And so the big thing is just knowledge. Like we're called to know the civic structures that we live in. Like this is our, we live in a society. First of all, like I said before, we're all called to participation regardless of the type of political structure we live in. But in the United States, particularly for those folks who live in the United States, your system is based on people participating. If you don't do it, other people will in your absence. And your vote is not counted. Your opinion is not counted. So it's just really important to help people understand, like, You don't have to be an expert in everything. And that's what I'm saying. Like, don't make this your heart where like you're literally on apps like all day. Like, what's the next like that? Because that is, again, that's a toxic relationship with our political life. And I've been there many times, often. But you also want to make sure that you're not, in this camp of detachment from things, not recognizing that your absence is really saying something. Like, you're really saying, that whatever is going on in the world is okay, essentially. Or like, yeah, because you're not doing anything to make it better. And you would just ask somebody, like, if you saw somebody hurting and suffering, would you want to do something about it? They'd be like, oh yeah, of course. Okay. Is our world hurting and suffering right now? I think so. And so, like, do something about it. Like, doesn't mean necessarily, again, you have to become an expert in tax policy, monetary policy. Like, you're sending articles about the Fed Bank and all stuff. Like, you don't have to necessarily do all that, but you definitely do need to figure out, okay, what are the things that I can make a difference on in my particular state of life? How can I have a basic enough knowledge to make an informed decision? How do I learn about the church's teaching through reviewing documents like Form and Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, USCCB puts out, through reading encyclicals of the popes, through going to trusted sources I may trust on the internet. There are people on the internet who do a good job of explaining certain topics from a Catholic perspective. Like, hear from them, hear from many voices though, and also know at the end of the day, you have to discern in the light of those things. Nobody's going to tell you the right thing to do. Like, you can make a difference in your own voice, right? As formed by the church. So just encouraging people and making it, it's easy. Once you learn the basic structure, it's easy to understand from there. I also use the analogy of sports, right? Like, because politics can be like a sport. Once you learn, like, if you were just watching football for the first time, like, you've never watched football, you'd be like, okay, I don't know who that, what role they're playing. I don't know why he's throwing the ball and that person's not throwing the ball. Like, why is somebody like catching the ball versus running the ball? Like, you just don't understand like the rules, or like, why is somebody now kicking? Like, who was kicking before? Like, why is kicking in this? Like, and so if you put all the pieces together though, you understand the structure, the different roles, right? The different layers of government, then everything kind of falls into place. You're like, okay, now I can enjoy this. Now I can understand how I can participate in this because I understand the basic structure that exists for me to participate in. And again, we can't wait for the church to tell us what to do, in the sense of a priest doesn't have to come to us and say, okay, now I bless you, go out and vote. No, you have to go, and you have to like have the activity also as a lay Catholic to, yeah, bring the gospel to life in your voting, in your civic participation, in your community groups, things like that. And so I would just give people that challenge, and invite people to that kind of solidarity and action, that love there through whatever political involvement they can do.
That's great. And what would you recommend parents too? Like, if they have children that aren't voting, how would you instill
Hopefully.
how would you instill kind of those social excuse me, those yeah, the values, the church, social church teaching values, as well as the doctrine. Like, how would you instill those within your own family life so that then they recognize it later on?
Yeah, this is really key. And I mean, again, we could talk about this for a long time because every one of the principles applies in the family. So really, it should really just be suffused throughout. I think the number one thing that parents need to know is that you need to know Catholic social doctrine if you have a family, because you are governing a society. Like, that is a society. How you form also your kids will shape their participation. So the dignity of the human person, that has to be talked about in the home. Like, you have to bring that out in different ways. I didn't come up with this, but people talk about how to teach the dignity of the human person. Like, if there's a woman who's pregnant, like, just showing the child, like, this is a human person. Like, a human person here. Talking about that, helping people to see that, to help them to understand what a human person is, like, that's important, right? So that pedagogy, that catechesis, that's critical. Also for solidarity, like, and obviously, like, solidarity often comes out as a social principle through, like, in the individual interactions, through things like charitable giving, but also through justice, right? So like, kids have a native sense of justice. Like, if somebody takes their toy, they'll be like, mine, like, this is my toy. Like, they'll even, and so they're forming this, but you have to continually shape that and help them understand, like, really those basic principles of like, hey, you can take a turn now, you can take a turn now. Let's figure it out. Oh, you can't take this from them because this is theirs, and kind of have that conversation. And also, you can bring in some deeper like doctrine here. So we didn't touch on this part of Catholic social doctrine, but there's a principle called the universal destination of all goods. And so I talk about this in my home also in a different way. So universal destination of all goods is the teaching of St. Thomas Aquinas and others, that all the goods that are created, that we have here on earth, all the resources, they're all oriented towards every human person. God gave the earth for the use of humanity, which means that nobody can really like hoard all of it for themselves. Like imagine like if there's a person like a billionaire who was like, okay, I'm buying all of this, the rivers in the world, and like I'm gonna like create like a river conglomerate, like whatever. You can't even travel or whatever without my like whatever. That would be like injustice, right? Because people have right to water and things like that. And so like I also use that in the home. Like all these goods are for all of us. So that means none of them really belong to you, in a sense of like if there's something that you were given in your birthday, then you would want somebody to share their toy with you. So you should share your toy with them. So yes, you have it, it's kind of given to you, but really it's not, right? At the end of the day, it's all of ours because we're a family. And that means that all these things are really all of ours. And we all contribute to this kind of pot of things that we share. Some people's, this is your room. Yes, this is your room. But at the end of the day, if people want to come in there and play, or we have family visiting, like you share it with others. And or the church teaches the same principle. Every you have the right to private property, but private property has a social mortgage, right? That means that essentially, like we have a responsibility to also share these resources with others who don't have, right? We have that responsibility in justice. So it's through like examples like that in individual family life, preferential option for the poor. I use this example in another place. I talked about like we should have a preferential option for the person in our family with the most needs, right? If we have people in our home who have special needs, or we have children who are going through a particularly difficult time, rather than looking at them as a burden on our family life, we should talk about how they're actually a gift. They're actually a gift. We should be serving them the most. Like they deserve more attention. That's exactly what we teach in the preferential option for the poor. We want to go out of our way to love and serve the poor and have a heart for them, those who are in place of vulnerability or need. That plays out in family life. We should talk about that and play that up. We should also talk about the lives of the saints who exemplify these things, right? Whether they're like lives of saints who are pro-life activists, like there are some of those, whether they're lives of saints who did immense charitable works, like Mother Teresa. Showing these videos, like, and these movies and these other things help people to understand, like, wow, there's like a social dimension to our faith and to like going out and doing things. Christ in the City, awesome apostle. Like, if you have access to Forum, just seeing them go and make friends with people who are experiencing homelessness, that's actually an awesome way of living Catholic social doctrine, because it's actually building that social friendship. And they have an awesome model, and not that I endorse them, I don't work for them or anything, but I love how that happens. And so, I showed my family watched that, and we talked about that. We talked about like that impact. I also think too, like going broadly and bigger than even that. I've taken my kids door knocking for candidates before. Now, obviously, you have to discern this, but you have to think about like, hey, how am I teaching about civic life through showing them I can get engaged in this, like. And this is what it looks like from the very ground up of a campaign all the way up. Now, obviously, you want to make sure it's immoral, you're making a choice, and you're also still giving them the freedom to say, like, this is why I'm doing this. And this is my opinion on this, whatever. But I think forming them through seeing is really critical. Like, they have to see, because then it becomes natural for them. If they've seen that civic participation from a young age, then it'll be very normal for them. Show them what it means to vote, like when you get the ballot, or when you go in and you take them with you, if you go in to vote. So, all those different things, like, just use the civic participation you're already doing, bring them into that and show them the ease of it, right? And show it how it's deeply tied to your gospel values and why this is important, why this particular candidate's important, or what they're saying that's important in this particular instance. And then when they get to a certain age, you obviously have to have those more explicit discussions, right? Maybe help them to see debates and then talk about it. Don't just let them see it with no discussion. Talk about it, or even show them historical debates. That may be even better sometimes. Show them historical debates and explain, like, these are the type of principles they're talking about. Like, this is what he means by this. This is what she means by this. Like, and help them to see, like, those different things, like, play out and how it actually affects people's lives. That will really enrich them when they get older.
Wow, excellent. Excellent advice too. I think that's super powerful to be able to speak to. I mean, we have a lot of young families that listen to this, and just showing that through your family is so powerful. How can our followers either, learn more about you or see the work that you do? Where can they find you on either any platforms or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't have a huge presence on things, but I do have like a link where you can see like different things I've done, like some different talks and some other podcasts, things that I've done when people ask me, and then things I've written as well. I've written on political topics, I've written on social doctrine topics, and so yeah, and some poetry as well. I've had published poetry in different places, like America Magazine and some other places. So yeah, you can check all that stuff out on the link that will be, I believe, in the show notes. Yeah, find me there.
Perfect. Thank you. Thanks so much, Lewis, for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2024, we want to reach as many people as possible. You can help by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovshrine.org.